Hi, Nicole. Good to see you. Hi, Lissa. Hi, Anne.
Grace is going to say hi before she goes upstairs.
Hi.
It's good to see you.
Facebook's the name whenever, because I talk about you all the time.
Cool.
So.
I'm so glad we got to see her. She's like a mini you.
Yeah, it happens sometimes, except her hair is
Oh,
crazy curly.
hang on.
Oh, yeah, she's a floof monster.
Oh, wow. Beautiful hair.
Thank you.
It would stick straight until puberty hit. And then it went crazy curly. So
Someone I hadn't seen in multiple years and saw for the first time like a year ago asked me if I got a perm.
funny how that happened. After each of my kids, my hair straight, curly.
Changed. Yep.
All right. Well, let's wait another minute. Today is like a weird, I don't know if you guys have noticed this or it's just me. I feel like today is like a scattered kind of day. Everybody that I've spoken to today has been all over the place and late. So I'm going to wait an extra minute for people to come in. Hey, Kelsey. Hi, Michelle. Let me turn my email off here. Oops. Hi, Kara. All right, I guess we'll get started. Let's take a moment and get centered and settled. We've got a practicum today. Yay! I'm really excited. I always love practicums, so I'm excited for that. But let's take a moment and get centered and settled. Just whatever you're doing, just take a moment and put it aside, so that you can really fully come into this space and into this container. And you can close your eyes if that's available to you right now. And begin to feel your body in your seat. And with the breath, allow yourself to really settle into your seat. To settle into this moment. To notice the floor beneath your seat and the ground beneath that. And to take a moment and make a connection with the earth. Then placing a hand on your heart, connect in with your heart. Connect in with your love. Connect in with your courage. Just take some nice deep breaths into your heart, bringing focus and energy and attention there. And asking your heart, what is it that you need to know today? What's most important? And continuing to focus on your heart. And asking your heart and asking all of you, your whole self, what is one thing that you know, no matter what, you are going to do or accomplish by the end of the week? What is one thing that you know, no matter what, by the end of the week, you're going to do or accomplish? And then ask yourself, ask your heart what you need to know about doing or accomplishing this thing, whatever it is. And together, we'll take a nice deep breath in. And exhale everything out with a sigh. And then allowing your eyes to flutter open. Bringing yourself fully present to our time together today. Okay, looks like we are a very intimate group today. Yay! It means that we'll have a lot of opportunity for sharing and practicing and looking. We are going to have practice time today. So we're going to do a listening practicum. And we're going to do part of it similar to how we do practicums in Sacred Depths. And then the second half a little bit different. So first, we'll do a group listening practice like we do in Sacred Depths. I'll ask for a volunteer and I'll try to ask as few questions as possible and not coach, just to get information from the volunteer. And then we'll share what we've listened and I'll review with you guys. It's always good to get a little bit of review on what you want to be listening for. And then we'll shift from there and we'll move into some groups where you'll have opportunity to do that as well. Although we're so small, maybe we'll just keep it to volunteers for all of us. I don't know. Let's see how it goes. In any event, as we step into, why are we doing a practicum? You guys all know, but I'm going to tell you anyway. We're doing this practicum because it's like always good. It's like going to the gym, you know, and working a muscle. And even if you're super seasoned, it's so valuable to continue to really, with intention and consciousness, work your muscles and work your listening muscle. Listening, as you guys know, is the basis of everything. Any kind of transformational work that you do, any kind of healing that you do, any kind of priestessing that you do, any kind of coaching that you do, starts with listening. So for our practice today, I want you to, call a volunteer, and then the rest of you will be listening. And here's some of the things I want you to be listening for. I want you to be listening for the who, right? Who is this person? It's so important for us to know our clients' who's, for us to know our clients' values and priorities and disposition and all of that, right? So we want to be listening for the who. We want to be listening for the client's emotional state. We want to be listening for the client's filters and the client's biases. We want to be listening for the client's engagement with what she's talking about. We want to be listening for when there's silence and if there's meaning around the silence, pacing, tone. We want to be listening to a match or mismatch between the client's behaviors, goals, and commitments. We want to be listening for what's motivating the client. We want to be listening for specific language that the client uses in case there's meaning there. We want to be listening for strengths and resources and celebrations, as well as obstacles, potential obstacles, fears, beliefs. And we also want to be listening for who is influencing the client. That can oftentimes be important and powerful. If something seems misplaced with the rest of the conversation, we want to be listening for that. And we also want to be listening for what the client isn't saying. Sometimes what they're not saying is a big clue to a breakthrough. All right, so all that being said, who'd like to be our volunteer for today? Our volunteer client. Anne, awesome, thank you. You can take yourself off mute. All right, I am going to try not to coach and just to elicit information from you. So tell us about a situation going on for you that you'd like support on.
So one of the things I've been noticing is happening this week is that I make action steps and then I do other things that I think of that are important, but then the action steps themselves kind of fall off. Some of the action steps are designed to confront aspects of the fear around visibility that I was working with in the somatic workshop. And there's a core piece of that. I actually had a meeting with somebody who's a friend, chosen family mentor this morning, talking about the places where that comes from, not valuing myself at the same level that I value others, and trying to run with the horses when maybe I'm more of a zebra or a unicorn or a dragon or something. Mm-hmm. So there's a big piece around embracing my, I can barely say the word, embracing my brilliance. And owning that in a way that lets me unlock what's needed to start creating content and deciding how I want to market and what I want people to know about me. That was a little convoluted, but.
That's okay. All good. If this were a session, what would you want to receive from the session?
I would like to receive a breakthrough insight or understanding that will, and or strategies that will allow me to energize a forward path.
I'm just going to ask like lots of random questions.
Okay.
Talk more about running with the zebras or the dragons versus running with the horses and how, and what that has to do with, you know, what you started off with was like, you're taking actions. It sounded to me like you're taking actions and then kind of they're falling away.
Right. So, as far as the taking action part, there's the doing things that need to be done, but they may not be the things that are a little bit confronting. So the things I put down as action steps, I didn't think at the time that they were confronting, but turns out they were. And part of what Heather and I were talking about this morning, the example that she gave was in her own professional life. Having had a professional mentor who said, you know, you manage a bunch of horses, but you aren't a horse. You're not even a zebra. You're basically a fucking glorious dragon. So the things you're supposed to be doing and the things the horses are supposed to be doing are not the same things. And if you keep trying to be a horse so that they'll like you and listen to you, you don't get to be your glorious, unique self. And then what you're really here to give us and to give your client and, you know, this is lost. And she was sharing that with me by way of saying, I think that's kind of where you are. You keep trying to make yourself be what you think other people will like, what will be acceptable and safe to them, instead of being who you are, which again, this is, ties back into that, the fear work that was being done, you know, and letting yourself be seen for who you are so the people who need that can find you.
And what's confronting about the action steps?
So, action steps, scroll them up. Like one of them was make a list of a few tasks that would feel good to get started. It was like, nope, we're not doing that. There's a different confronting about different action steps, but that one in particular, because scheduling actions that get the ball rolling mean I have to decide how I want that ball to roll. And what if I'm wrong? What if I make the wrong decision and I waste my time, I waste my energy? Or in other places in my life, what if I make a wrong choice and somebody else gets hurt or you know, so Heather and I are both on the same committee at my Unitarian Universalist congregation, which is determining the policies, procedures, and protocols under which that physical facility will eventually safely reopen, which won't be any time this calendar year. We had to come up with a small protocol for a very specific group for whom, as the 12-step groups that meet at our facility, the harm is actually greater to them not being able to meet than the risk of contracting COVID. So that was a place where I had action steps that were not related to work per se, where I needed to type this up for the committee. And I just, it got done eventually, but it got down to the very last minute because, oh my God, what if I miss something? What if I miss something and somebody gets sick? Somebody becomes disabled. Somebody dies. You know, what am I missing that's going to put somebody at risk? And then it's going to be all my fault. Even though rationally, I know I can only do the best that I can do. The committee can only form the best policies that we can form with the data that's available. And then it's down to, do people follow the guidelines? Do they follow the rules that we gave them? And is the data that we have accurate enough? And it's actually a pretty good metaphor for what happens when I think about putting things out for my business, except I'm not worried about somebody getting sick or dying. I'm worried that I'm going to alienate people by saying it wrong, by focusing on the wrong thing, and then I'll get hurt because my business will crash or somebody will have an expectation that isn't what I offer and then there'll be a disappointment or they won't get what they came for. You know, so it just sort of, it all hooks into that same place of being able to let go of having to control for the things I can't. And not getting started because I can't control all these externals. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does.
This has been like my stuck point. Like this has been a big one. Like there's been progress and it's like slogging through mud to stick with the progress that's been made and to keep being with it and moving forward. I think I also would like a breakthrough in having it not, I don't know if they can have it not feel so hard. Do you know? Mm-hmm. It'd be nice if it could not feel so hard.
Yeah.
But I don't actually know if that's even realistic. Maybe it's supposed to feel hard.
I'm holding back. I'm just like, not getting you to solution here. Just trying to, but yeah, I hear you. I really hear you. What's your definition of hard?
Labor. You know, the like birthing labor. Tying back into that metaphor from the workshop, that it becomes something that is taking, in order to focus on it at all, it takes a tremendous effort to stay with it. The urge to dodge it is just so strong. And then it feels like I'm arm wrestling myself not to dodge out the side into some other something, whatever that is.
The dodge and the arm wrestling yourself, is that just in your business or do you know that from other places?
Oh yeah, that's everywhere. Yeah. Yeah, because it's a very binary kind of system in that it's like, okay, I'm going to tackle this and I'm going to make this work and I'm going to get through this and I'm going to see what there is to see, right? And I'm just going to like persevere, or it's totally like la 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 la, something else. What? No, not doing that. There's not a lot of in between. And so then also I think with the not wanting it to be hard is that I don't have facility around finding like gentle mode with myself. Mm-hmm. If I'm not like pushing myself through it to the max, then I'm not going to do it at all. But who wants to push themselves through it to the max all the time? Like that sucks. That would actually explain a lot of why there's a bunch of things that don't get done. The all or nothing.
Yeah. Okay, one more question and then I think we'll have a lot to work with. I noted the word energize. You said you want to, you know, energize a new path. Mm-hmm. Just speak to us about that a little bit more.
So I am aware from a business perspective, that to put myself out there, to become visible, to share my brilliance with people, to help people that would want to work with me find me, I have to actually, you know, do that. I have to put content out. I have to make some decisions about what I want people to know. Was actually one of the things I said to Heather is like, can we do this again in a few weeks and can we have a conversation to like excavate some of the crap that's weighing down my, you know, the edges that don't let me see the shape of the brilliance. If that makes sense. So I know that there are questions that I could be asking myself and journaling on, or even just little snippets that I could put out as I think of them. And I'm like, well, I know this is a thing that would be at least okay for people to know. It may not be the whole picture, but I get stuck and stopped not doing any of it because what if it's not good enough? What if it's wrong? And it requires... it requires looking upon myself with kindness and appreciation. I don't really do that.
Okay. All right, good. I think we have enough information. Thank you. And you can put your coaching cap on to your practitioner cap.
Okay.
So what did you guys hear? And you can use the hand raise so I can see on the side. What are some things that you guys heard?
I heard that she, Anne, is it Anne?
Yep.
That's Anne.
I heard that Anne is feeling quite challenged with running a lot of masculine energy, and that she really wants to get in touch with her feminine energy and really tap into her self-love. And I heard that she hasn't been doing that, and that's creating kind of a mismatch in the alignment with where she's wanting to go and bring to herself and to her clients. So that's, yeah. I mean, I heard a lot of things, but that was the main.
I know. Do one at a time so that everybody has a chance. I love that. And I love, for you, Shawmette, like for your clients, particularly the language that you're using, 100%, like if Anne were an ideal client of yours, even though she didn't mention masculine or feminine, it's spot on, 100%. And it may also apply to Anne, that language may also resonate in this situation for you, Anne, and I'm wondering if it does.
The language kind of like surprised me for a second, and then I, so making notes about what people are saying, so I remember it later. I think in terms of having going into kind of an like energetic binaries, yeah, like the thing that just came to mind was, smash the patriarchy. Like, that's what tells us if you don't produce, you're worthless. Yeah. And that's also the system that denigrates what has typically been seen as feminine qualities and things that have been considered woman's work as being somehow less than. And I think I do fall into a trap of kind of like, my early training, around how to be in business was, very much from a competitive, masculine, massive effort if you want massive results kind of.
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
Bullshit. And yeah. Because I have not yet generated the kinds of results that I see other people generating using a more feminine collaborative model, I think I get scared that that's not going to work for me. And so I go back to this push, but that's not working for me now either.
Yeah. Beautiful. Good. So this is, I'm so glad that that language resonates for you. Shawmette, right on. And this is actually a great illustration for all of us, not just on listening skills, but if you guys remember back to creating awareness skills, how as practitioners, when we introduce new language, it can spark a lot for a client. So it's like the client is saying, it's not that we're sharing, what Shawmette did is not like introduce a whole new idea, but she was listening to what Anne was saying and putting a particular language or filter onto it, which activated some ideas and thoughts. Awesome, beautiful. Nicole. You there, Nicole?
Yes, I'm here. Hi. I have some hiccups with the connection, so I hope you can all hear me. It was also the language that struck me. It was a language in combination with the sighs. She sighs a lot, and there was language like, it feels hard, I'm stuck. It's like she's building a wall, and maybe also a wall around her. And what also, I also heard her saying a lot of things in which she focused on other people. Mm. And the what if scenarios. I also heard some tendency to perfection. What if I'm wrong? What if it's the wrong thing I'm focusing on? What if I'm enough? I'm pushing it to the max. So it looks, it stuck me that it's all around perfection. It has to be perfect. And in combination with building up a wall with the language, I can imagine she feels stuck.
Nice. Okay, beautiful. So let's take each of those things. So first of all, just noticing the size, right? It's not just the words that we want to listen for, but it's the size, it's the silence, it's the grunts. Also, did you guys notice along those same lines that she also has a sense of humor about things, right? Like there were the heavy moments, yeah. But she also could laugh at herself, right? These are things that as practitioners, we want to take note of because it's good information for us, right? Just like the sigh lets us know that she's exhausted, the kind of chuckling and the laughing at herself lets us know that we have permission to noodle in you know, some ways. Sometimes when someone is just serious and heavy about it, we may tread a little bit more lightly than if they're calling themselves out. It, and kind of having fun, some fun with it too, right? So we want to note all of those things that speaks to emotional state and to energy, right? Which is as important as content. Nicole also noticed that Anne was talking a lot about other people with less focus on herself. Important, right? We want to take note of that. That may be, if this were an actual coaching session, that may be a pathway that as a practitioner, you decide to take, right? Because we have to make decisions as practitioners based on what we're listening. We're always going to pick up a bunch of things. And usually it's more than one road that's going to lead to where the client needs to go anyway, right? That's like the beauty of this work. It's not just one thing. It's not just a science. So we want to take note of those things. And then Nicole, you also mentioned perfection, lots of myth of perfection going on in here, which is related to, as Sacred Depths practitioners, we know this, as soon as, if someone is aware enough to mention binary thinking, that is always connected to perfectionism in one way or another. For those of you that have been through the Myth of Perfection module, hopefully you remember that. If not, you're re-remembering it. Good. Awesome. Lissa.
Hi. One of the things I noticed that I heard was this through line of an awareness of her brilliance and magnificence. I can't remember if that's the word she used, but of being a dragon. It's not just a horse. It's not just an exotic, you know, horse with stripes like a zebra. It's a dragon. And the word brilliance came up a lot. And the being afraid to, she spoke a lot about putting herself out there as she is, you know, finding so that people, she's got concerns about being acceptable to people so that they'll work with her. And so there's like a mismatch of wanting to be acceptable to people at the same time as grasping the idea that she's this dragon and needs to show up as a dragon and attract dragon clients. So that was like a mismatch of getting used to the idea of her brilliance.
Yeah, for sure. 100%. And I'm going to pull something out even more for listening, right? So yes, it is true that Anne was talking about the dragon because someone earlier in the day had told her the story, right? So, but what I want to point out is that someone who is not, doesn't, A, number one, deeply desire to know their extraordinariness and their brilliance, and also someone who isn't close to being able to own their brilliance would not resonate so deeply with this metaphor of the dragon and then bring it into the conversation, right? Like, dragon is a pretty big deal, right? It's not just the zebra that she mentioned. Like, dragon is extraordinary. For her to hook onto that, be willing to hook onto that, consciously or unconsciously, and then be willing to share that, speak that into this space, that's resonant for her. As the listeners, that it tells us a lot about where Anne is at in her journey and actually desiring and claiming this for herself. Does that make sense? Good. They're all great. Who else? Can we hear from more of you? What else did you hear?
Just to kind of continue with that, what I noticed was, first of all, kind of what you said really struck me, that this story resonated so much with her and the visual of it. So then I could see her even more, that is something maybe she sees in images, and that's very powerful for you. Which I would then continue on with as the coach. But then I also noticed you said something, there was this line of seeing your brilliance and this dragon and that whole understanding and that knowing of yourself. And then the language you said when you got to, oh yeah, but I'm not enough. It was something almost like, oh, there's that old story, or that I know that that's not really me, but there's this whole thing called the culture and the image and all this stuff that I'm, you know, maybe trying to still fit into. But it's almost as if you have this deep knowing that that's just this little, this thing over here that you're still working through. Mm-hmm. But to me, your belief and your brilliance was much stronger. So, and then you said, oh, okay, I need to look at myself with kindness. It's almost like, I don't know how to put that in words, but it was like you were speaking this truth, and you were almost saying, I have a little bit more of this to go, like this not enoughness. And I can do that. I'm a dragon. Like, I don't know. That's what I got from it. Yeah. And that, like, the more that you put that out there, the more, just by saying it, it's just you're diffusing it. I don't know. It's just like, does that make sense?
I want to hear from Anne first, and then I'll pull out some more, since she's asking if it makes sense, Anne.
Yeah. So using that notion of, you know, what if you're actually a dragon and you've been trying to make yourself be a horse, right? Running on the ground with four legs is not going to be your forte, right? But flying through the air or flying through the water, we had a whole thing about talking about different elements and what resonated, and it was a much longer conversation. Water, dragon, for what it's worth. but like this idea of, yeah, what if I embrace that? And what if I could embrace my uniqueness and embrace that as valuable? There's a place where, looping back to the perfectionism, because I was really raised that mistakes are not okay. You're smart, you should be able to figure everything out. And if not, you know, then you're bad. You know, it wasn't said that way, but it was certainly communicated in other ways, right? And so there's a lot of internal pressure. As soon as I have an insight or see another piece of myself clearly, to like never struggle with that again, to know the perfect way to embrace it for myself and put it out in the world. And I think the piece about, and to be, you know, kinder to myself is, and I don't know actually at what point I said that, but it's also connected to the, you know, I can't control for all of the external factors.
And I'm going to pause you because I love everything that you're sharing and you're processing, but I want to like keep it to the listening
skill. Yeah, it just sort of,
yeah. I can hear that it sparked a bunch of things. That's awesome. Yeah.
The short version is to be able to actually see myself clearly and embrace my truth. There also has to be a measure of kindness that it's a process, and that is definitely a stop. So, yeah.
Yeah, good. Good. And so, you know, with some of the pieces that Laura said, first of all, just using the dragon as a metaphor, that's something that can be used throughout the session. Do you guys notice the Anne, the shirt that Anne is wearing right now? Oh. It's so dragon-like. I love it. I love, Laura, what the other thing that you brought forward that I really love is like this subtle listening of what was her energy when she was talking, when she was using words like brilliance versus what was her energy when she was using words like not good enough, right? Because that says that, and basically what I heard you say, Laura, is that like you can tell a lot about a client based on the emphasis that they're putting on certain words. And I agree, like as I was listening to Anne, I also happened to know a bit about Anne. In my mind, I was saying, you know, this like, I'm not good enough, all that. Like, first of all, Anne is super smart, right? Like we can tell that, we can tell she's done a lot of work on herself. She's very self-aware. And this I'm not good enough thing, you could tell, I knew this anyway, but you, if you were listening you just to this, you could hear, She's done a lot of work on this, right? Like there's vestiges of this still left over, but it's not in, in the session, you're probably, and this is why this is important, in the session, you're likely not gonna go into what the not good enough, unless the client is really like, no, we have to look at that, right? Because you can tell that been there, done that. Of course, it's gonna play in to whatever you look at next, but you're gonna need other inroads in because she's got a, like a good layer of understanding on that. That was very long-winded what I said, but is that helpful for you guys? Just in like listening to the subtleties to know what directions to go in.
If I can highlight something that you said, yeah. Is that there's a reaction happening. Mm-hmm. So I'm aware, like part of what I need is I need for people to know that I am smart, that I am insightful, that I am unafraid to self-examine and therefore unafraid to help them self-examine, right? But when it comes to my own stuff, like when you said to the group here, like Anne is smart, I started to tear up and get really embarrassed. Because you said it out loud.
Well, so I'm so glad you're sharing this. So this is so awesome, right? This illustrates so much. So first of all, as practitioners, we want to listen for those things. Mm-hmm. And we don't listen just to listen. We listen to create awareness, right? So we don't want to keep information to ourselves. We want to create awareness with our clients, around everything, but particularly around strengths and resources and celebrations. It's so important to listen for those things, to know those things about our clients, and to communicate that we see those things in our clients.
And that's a place where if it was an actual coaching session, like if it were my client, I'd be like, wow, so you felt like embarrassed and started to cry and felt like you wanted to hide. Like, can we explore that?
Right.
Right. And it's interesting because
that relates to the entire topic at hand, right?
Yeah.
And it's such a great illustration. You guys have heard me say this in Sacred Depths before. There's always two subtexts happening in a session. It's like the content and the learning through the content. And then the relationship with the client and the learning and the corrective dynamics through the relationship with the client. And often the two are related to each other. Does that make sense, you guys? I just wanna, yeah. There's a lot coming through and I wanna hear more about what you guys are hearing, but I wanna hear like what you're learning so far from this conversation. Cause I feel like there's a lot of important pieces in here.
There's one other thing I can point out about that.
Mm-hmm.
completely different dynamic having this conversation in a group. My reaction would have been very different in a one-on-one session. I probably wouldn't have had nearly as strong a reaction, but I'm observing you saying something about my strengths to other people that I know are still a safe group. It brought up completely different things. So it's a different dynamic individually than it is in groups.
100%. And even though we're not talking about groups, like, and those of you that have done the facilitator training with me, you know, like, you're always going to use the group to play off, right? To create more learning, more awareness, more growth, more vulnerability, all of that. That's one of the reasons why I say over and over and over again with one-on-ones and with groups, create the container. Because if we didn't have a container here, I couldn't have said that without you wanting to just like run away and possibly run away, right? Good. What are you guys seeing so far? We'll go back to what you heard in a second, but what's important just for you as a practitioner? What are you hearing here? Anyone want to share? Lissa.
That it really is what you call the four levels, you know, that everything, it's not just the words, it's, you know, the physical, emotional, mental, spiritual, that there are signals for each of them, all woven in to the conversation.
Yeah, there's signals for them, and then there's ways that you can pull that out. Right.
And so it's this multi-sensory awareness beyond just hearing. It's, yeah. So.
Yeah, good. Kara.
Thank you, Anne. This has already been named before, but I love the metaphor of the dragon and what Nicole said about the wall. And this idea of like this powerful dragon kind of building a wall around itself. With the, you named the edges, right? And sort of this max energy, and that I loved the flow of the session and that, and just the asking of questions and the way that, Anne came to her own understanding about the importance of kindness. And just through asking the questions, right? Just through asking the questions and letting her be in her own space with the answers versus interjecting, which I think as coaches we're so often prone to doing, how she could come to that beautiful awareness herself. And that on the heels of that, you know, through this power of spaciousness, and this sort of unusual container that we're in, right? But like to see the power of how through the flow of just asking questions and letting the client be in their own space and be in their own awareness, one thing that you can say, like, I see that you're smart, and then the noticing that the client can have of her own experience of that can open up so much. It was like, when you said that, it felt like the brick wall opened up and the dragon got to like see why it's so scary, right? To be seen and notice, like, no wonder I'm building this wall. And so I just wanted to name the power of deep listening and asking questions and how like one reflection on the heels of that can open up so much.
Yeah. We oftentimes think we have to do so much, mm-hmm. but we don't. Yeah, beautiful. So well said. Who else? Either what you're seeing so far or some other things that you heard Anne say. Kelsey, not to pick on you, but I want to pick on you because I love having cameras because I can like, you know, you can't see everything on video, but I'm like, I don't know where Kelsey is. I need to find out.
I'm here. And I was a little distracted at the beginning because at 10 o'clock, which is when we start, is exactly when I have to drive my daughter to this thing that the whole picking up and the whole thing. So I'm on my headphones, I'm listening, but I'm also trying to deal with her. And I'm thinking to myself, why am I doing this? This is totally ridiculous. So I listened, but I was like not as much in my coachy. I was just listening. I heard this either or, right? I heard this shadow that resonates with me, which is probably part of why I heard it, which is like, I'm either all doing or I'm la 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 la. Like, and that's like this either or thinking, this shadow, right? When something's in shadow, like maybe lazy is in shadow for her, I would have maybe explored a little bit of that because
something
goes and goes and then goes over there instead of like this. So
even though you totally had your practitioner thing on, because that was one of the things I was going to test anyone that had been through a shadow training with me so far, if they picked up on the shadow there. So there, you got it, right?
Yay!
Yeah, so this is important. And for those of you that have been through shadow with me, and also we'll look deeper for those of you that are in advanced, but we could totally work with shadow just based on what we were hearing here. This, I'm persevering, and then I'm totally distracted and all over this, right? So we know when there's a hyper and a hypo like that, that there's something that the client has put in shadow on about that spectrum that they have made wrong, that they have made a sacred contract and decided it is bad. But whatever it is that they've decided is bad is actually the gold and a big key to the transformed place for them, right? So that would be a direction to go in, and absolutely shadow in there. Nice. Good. I knew I called on you for a reason.
Oh, and the other thing that I heard at the very, just a minute ago, when you were talking about using the container, I forget exactly how you said it, but it was like the relationship and how you saw her, that really, like how you were able to hold her experience and see her deeply in a way that was like not about the content necessarily, but just about seeing her. That is something that I really witnessed and felt like that's part of the magic, is to, you know, she needed to be seen and heard and held, her experience held.
100%. It's just like, we can never underestimate the holding, the seeing and the hearing, and also the relationship with the client, you know, however that takes shape, because so many of the dynamics of the outside world and the outside relationships want to be worked out when you're in a tight container with a practitioner, you know. Good. Anne.
So from a practitioner hat perspective, there was one thing that I am seeing as people are reflecting my words back. And it goes to what you were just distinguishing around shadow, that I would need to be kind to myself. There's a, I think was it, I'm not sure who it was that was calling out the mismatch that was there, that if I were hearing clients say that, I would hear, okay, so they're working on owning their powerful and unique brilliance. And they're like, I would have to be kind to myself and accepting of myself. And it sounds like those two things don't really coexist. And that would be accurate. Like I definitely have it, like kind, strong, powerful, accepting can't coexist. That if you're strong and powerful, that you're unkind or rigid, and that's not how I want to be, and that's not who I am. At least I don't think it's who I am. So that's a place where with a client, I'd want to dialogue with, okay, well, let's look at that. Can it be a both and? Can those be integrated in service of one another?
Yeah.
And that's, yeah, I just made a whole bunch of notes about stuff to look at in Shadow and, you know, gaming geeky family. You know, my heart sister is chaotic good, and I'm lawful good, and chaotic.
I only vaguely understand what you're talking about.
Chaotic alignment is definitely in Shadow for me. So we were talking about like, huh, that's a thing that's in Shadow. Where could I give myself permission to be more like you? So, good. Yeah.
Good. Awesome. Who else? What else did you guys hear?
There was the part about taking over responsibility for others.
Yes.
And somehow I wonder if that is linked to what you were just talking about with your sister and the kindness. I guess I'll ask you, is that perhaps an overcompensation of, if I do this kindness for others and this over responsibility, then I'm being kind? I just wonder if that's somehow linked.
Yeah, definitely the over responsibility piece. And there may be a link there between the over responsibility and then the kindness and kindness to self, appreciation of self too. Good. Lisa.
I have one more question. What would that look like if you gave that to yourself?
Nice. Yeah, I love that question.
Yeah, in with all this either or and being kind and over responsibility, it really stood out that her examples of, like, she uses the word mistakes, but then she describes epic things like death and destruction, that it's not merely a mistake. Like, somebody could die from not catching everything or not planning correctly, not crossing all the T's and dotting all the I's. And so it's that either or and the, just that hyper and hypo.
Yeah. Like, dream. Yeah. And that, and the, like, someone could die also against that over responsibility,
Right. So kindness.
Over responsibility. Did you guys see, like, the over responsibility is what stops her in her tracks from taking action? So there's like a whole mechanism going on around that where it's like, oh my God, there's so much pressure and so much responsibility and myth of perfection and all the things. And then what it sounds like, that's exhaustion. She used the word exhaustion. We'll get to that in a little bit. That's exhausting. But it also stops her in her tracks from taking the most aligned actions or the actions that are going to get her to where she is.
And on the other side of that spectrum, so if making a mistake means death, then being kindness is that over responsibility. It's like, it's not just getting somebody a cup of tea and letting them put their feet up. Like, what does it look like to be kindness where you keep them alive?
Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot of responsibility there. Yeah. Good. Anyone else? All right, I'll share just a couple of other pieces. We really hit a lot of the pieces. I heard that Anne spends a lot of energy overthinking things. That is an Achilles heel of smart people. They are also overthinkers. But it was like tiring just to hear about all of the thinking. So that might be something important to bring in, to keep in mind. I think I wrote this phrase down and I can't remember if she actually said this phrase or I made it up, but I think she said this phrase. If not, it was close to it. She said, I feel like I can't be me. And of course that relates to the horse versus the dragon. But there was something to me, there was an emotional charge in that didn't feel as explored as the not good enough. There may have been something in there. The arm wrestling myself was such a vivid image and something that I would probably like repeat. I think I did repeat it in the next question, but it's something that I would definitely bring in because there's something so visceral and potent in not the ways we want it to be potent about arm wrestling oneself. And there's on a body level, there's probably things to that can be explored or unpacked there. Along with the taking a lot of energy, you know, the overthinking and taking a lot of energy to think, at some point Anne said, like, the persevering, and then the distracting, she said, like, it's exhausting. It is exhausting, right? So first, number one, just to note exhaustion, right? And how it, because then we could go into a wheel of self-sabotage. I was saying this before, right? And then again, like, there's so many pathways, which is what I love. I'm just throwing all these things, right? Because we could break down this, like, persevere, exhaustion, distraction, right? But the other reason why I'm bringing up the exhaustion piece is because it relates exactly to what Anne said she wanted to walk away with from the session, which is to energize a path forward, right? So subtle, but could be very powerful to start making some connections there. Anything else that anyone wants to mention?
Are you okay, Anne?
I am.
Yeah, just take a few deep breaths.
Was it Lissa that was saying if mistake equals death, then what's the kindness and responsibility? That right there. Like that blew something open. So with the pandemic, right? Like, yeah, like my whole life, it's been like, oh, if I make a mistake, somebody might get hurt, or like that kind of childish thing of like, somebody could get hurt, somebody could die, where you don't realize what the relative risks are. But now we're in a time when, well, yeah, that is actually a thing, right? But the kindness and the over-responsibility is how you keep people alive. My mom was a physician of internal medicine, and she was also diabetic, and she would stress eat. And then she would say things like, well, you know, so I would say, Mom, I'm worried about your health. And I'd say, well, I eat this way because I'm stressed, and I'm stressed because of you. And so she wasn't taking responsibility for her own well-being. And she died when I was 27, she was 62. And she had a conversation when she could still talk with me and my dad about, like, if she didn't get full capacity back, I won't go into the whole story, but what happened with her, that she didn't want to be, you know, at home and having people have to take care of her. And I had just, like, 3 months before finally moved out of my parents' house. And I'd said, should I move back so I can help take care of you? And she said, no, I'm not gonna let you do that. I'm not gonna let you move back to take care of me. And some part of me hurt because then she died. Some part of me heard you didn't do it right the first time. And that's why I'm this way. You didn't take care of me right the first time. So that's why I'm this way. And I'll die before I let you take care of me. So I have no choice in taking over responsibility and catastrophizing what will happen if I don't, and if I don't do this extra caregiving and extra worrying about how this is all going to impact other people, because she died. She did. She died. It wasn't my fault. Like, I know that. But some part of me has never let go of feeling responsible somehow. So thank you for bringing that to light, because I knew there was a piece of that, but like the chain link just kind of went clink, you know, like I could hear the sound in my head of the connection being made. So thank you for asking if I was okay. It's just, it's a lot of energy moving through now. And some of the sighing is when I can feel there's energy that I've been holding that I need to let go of. It's like, so.
Yeah, just keep breathing.
So yeah, I'm just going to sit here and cry for a while, and that's all right.
Good job. So and proud
another
of you.
Great illustration. Yeah. And another great illustration of like how listening skills, right? Just sharing what we're hearing and reflecting, right? It's not some 10-step method for a breakthrough. It never is. Beautiful. Anything else that anyone wants to share?
I actually have a question, Joanna. I relate to what Anne's talking about because I had a very similar thing happen too. And is there a reason why, I mean, on an intellectual level, we know it wasn't our fault, but on a, like an energy level, an emotional level, we take that on. Like, is that a common thing that people do?
What I've seen, I mean, I can only share from what I've seen, yes. And this may not always be the case. And I don't know if this is the case for you, Anne. I mean, because having a parent die is traumatic enough to create the pattern. But that being said, oftentimes, like another person may not have taken that on, but I would want to noodle in if there was something like even that earlier that was so much more subtle than that, that would have the client feel like she is responsible. Because, you know, again, it may just be that it was born out of that situation. That can be the case for sure. But from what I've seen more times than not, there's even like a subtler, there's already a seed planted before that around taking responsibility.
Yeah.
It likely wouldn't just come in that same situation, that same exact situation. It's less likely to come if there weren't other pieces, subtle pieces throughout to let the client know that she was responsible for others in one way or another.
Yeah.
Kelsey.
Would you bring that in? Because I thought the same thing, like definitely there was that event, but you know, having been through therapy for very similar types of stuff, like in my therapeutic process, I know it comes from, for me, it comes from years of a type of mothering that I did or didn't get. Would you bring that in for the client or not?
I would noodle in a little bit for this reason, because it will help the client even, of course, Anne already, she said intellectually, she knows it wasn't her fault, right? Like she already knows it intellectually, but weaving in the piece that this was like, had been a seed for a much longer time and a lens that she looks through her life, not just this one situation, can create even more awareness around, oh, this is my lens. This really wasn't my fault. Like to be able to take that in to maybe a little bit of a deeper level, that wasn't her responsibility. It's just the lens that she, it's almost like she finds her responsibility in any situation that she looks at.
Right. And maybe it's my filter to like attach it to a psychological pattern from sort of a...
No, you know, that's what I'm saying. No, I would.
Yeah, so it's, even if it's subtly critical of the mothering, you risk that.
Everything is critical of mothering. Like, as a mother myself, I can say, you know, I mean, there's so many times that John and I are like, let's put more money in the therapy fund. We just effed that one up. Okay. Oh, I'm making a joke, but of course, yes. And here's the and: using your listening skills to know how attached the client is to seeing the mother in a perfect way or perfect relationship or whatever. And then it's not that I then wouldn't go there, but you can know how bold or lightly to tread based on that.
Yeah,
good question. I love this. This is one of my favorite listening practicums ever. So rich, so much more than listening is coming out of it. Awesome. Anything else that anyone wants to share? And saying the goal of parenting isn't to save your children from future therapy, but to screw up just enough that their therapy is affordable. Totally.
Like, perfect parenting is detrimental because it models that mistakes are not okay. You have to screw up and repair so they can see how to do that, which is automatically going to create therapy issues. So one thing that came up for a question for myself from this also, is that there are themes in all of this about how strength and personal responsibility were modeled separately and together. And so, question about how was feminine strength or female power modeled, and what and how did that relate to personal responsibility? So I have notes for myself on journaling on that.
Yeah, beautiful.
Yeah.
You guys are awesome. All of your shares, just so insightful. Amazing, amazing. So let's take a moment before we wrap. We're not gonna have time for any more practice, but take a moment and get clear for yourself, like a few questions. Number one, what are you learning from our call today? What are you taking, whether it has to do with listening or something else, what are you really taking for yourself from our call today? And I'll give you another 10 seconds on that. And then next question, what's your next edge when it comes to listening? Where's your next edge when it comes to your listening skills? Maybe something in particular you want to be listening for, or something else. What's your next edge? Lissa.
My takeaway is that I that really wanted to be said. What I said really wanted to be said, and the pull of intuition or whatever that guidance is, like, you probably saw I kept raising my hand and some of it would change, but it just wanted to be said.
You didn't and raised and then put yourself,
this, because the subject would change, but it was like, no, I had to bring that up. And I just am very grateful that it was like a linchpin moment.
I'm grateful too. And I think a couple of things. So first of all, just for all of our learning, again, back to listening. Listening is always this beautiful dance between listening to our client and listening to ourselves and listening to our client, right? So illustrated beautifully. And for you, Lissa, I just want to say I'm so happy that you did ultimately raise your hand and share it, not just because it opened up so much for Anne, but because I know that you, this raising hand and putting down and raising hand and putting down is a metaphor a little bit for how you've been in terms of owning your brilliance and your intuition. I just feel like it played out so beautifully here where you could really practice stepping more into your dragon and you were so own. And I hope you really take in how impactful you are.
Thank you.
Yeah. Good. Who else? Anyone else wants to share what they're taking or what their edge is? Nicole.
Yeah. Yes, I'm talking, right? You can hear me. I'm struck by the deep listening, like Kara also said. It's so powerful, and we always tend to want something as a practitioner and do something and work because we think, well, we're being paid and there has to be a result and all those, well, beliefs get in the way. So just listen. And I'm going to practice tomorrow because deep listening is such a gift to be present and fully listen to the other human being because that's what it is.
Yeah, so well said. I think it's a gift to our client to be heard, but I actually think it's a gift for us to have the privilege of hearing another person, listening to them. Beautiful. Kelsey.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Anne, as well.
I agree with everything that's been said. And I just, one thing that I'm noting is like, sometimes I feel this is probably the overdoing part of me. If I'm just listening, well, it's both. I feel like I need to be doing more than just listening sometimes. And also when I'm just listening, I know at the end of the session that they got something out of it, but it feels a little bit like, because we've learned all these skills, like befriending the fear and do this and you start here and you end here. Sometimes on a session where I just listen, at the end, I'm like, what did we do? Did we get towards her goals? And I don't know if that's me feeling it or her feeling it or what. And then I feel like, I'm like, what are you taking away? And it's like, I feel like it's soupy sometimes if I'm just listening. So how do I work with that?
Yeah, so it's such a good question. And so I don't think it's just listening. To me, this is just for me. And this is a little bit, I think, what distinguishes coaching or like whatever it is that it is that we do. I hate even calling sacred depths coaching, but it's what distinguishes like transformational coaching, whatever, from just pure therapy, is that there is a goal in mind with coaching. Like there is an overarching place that the client wants to get through like all the sessions with you, a result. And there's also a place where they want to get to by the end of the session, right? We're always asking what the intention is. Whereas sometimes with like pure therapy, it can just be holding the container to listen, right? And so the client can also hear themselves and all of that. So that being said, listening is the most important thing. That's why I teach it like right after energetics and sacred depths, but I see it as the basis for all the other things, right? Like you can't masterfully create awareness if you're not deeply listening. You can't ask a breakthrough question if you're not deeply listening. I don't think in many, many, many sessions, you don't need to do more than create awareness, ask some questions, and then strategize. Befriend your fear and wheel of self-sabotage and all the other things are just more tools for your toolbox to like, if you want to go deeper. But for me, like a session where I'm listening deeply, I've held that space. I've created awareness either through reflecting the truth or acknowledging or honoring what is or celebrating, you know, or asking a question to create awareness. And then there's some kind of strategy in it, which could just be one action step that they're taking, inner or outer. And then I absolutely make sure I ask at the end, what are you taking from this for integration? But that is that sometimes can be more powerful than shadow work, right? Depending on the situation. Those foundational principles are queen, you know? And then the other things are cool, and use all of those foundational principles in kind of more elaborate ways. So I very rarely, unless a client gets on and I ask what their intention and they're just like, I just need to vomit something out, or I just need to be witnessed, then it may be a listening session, right? Because that's the result that they want by the end of the session. But otherwise, I am going to use creating awareness questions and at least a little bit of strategizing. Is that helpful?
Yeah.
So even if you've spent most of the session listening, ask what the client, like, what are you seeing? What are you taking? And how does that relate to what you want to, you know, what you wanted to get from this, and what do you want to do from here, right? So it doesn't have to be equally balanced throughout the session. You just want to hit those pieces. Mm-hmm. What are you here? Tell me if that makes sense, or if there are questions there.
Yeah, that makes sense. I think sometimes I forget to ask at the very beginning, what do they want to take away? And so then I sort of know where we're going, you know, long term, but then the listening, yeah, just asking it, how does it relate back to what you wanted to get out of it, you want.
Totally. Today. And try to remember in the beginning to ask, just like if you would have an acupuncture client come in, you wouldn't just start working on them. You'd be like, what's been going on? What's up? Like, what, you know, where do you have pain, or what, you know, whatever it is, you want that. You want to kind of establish where you're going for the session.
Yeah.
Good.
I also, I was late, so it was really hard for me to track, but I think that it's also like, there's a way to, you know, if we ask for the intention to like circle it back, but if we know a client well, at the end to bring it, or like even bring it up to like, they're connected to their larger goals or any patterns that we normally see because, or that we've seen with them, because I think it also, you know, shows them the value of being witnessed and listened to, and also like energetically like recreates like the holding and the relationship that we have with them as a coach, that we're holding like all of that, and it's not a wasted session because they just cried or like went on.
Totally, 100% to everything that you just said. And you didn't exactly say this, but I want to toss it in because it's related. You know, one of the other things we want to be listening for is how a client has progressed, and then create awareness around that. So I was on a session with a client yesterday, and she was talking about her new plan, her new program that she's launching, and amazing. And she was speaking about this. She was bringing all of her talent. She's a corporate coach, but she also does somatic work, and she's integrating everything together. And she was just like speaking about it freely and boldly, and her marketing. And I just said to her, you know, if we would have been having this conversation 6 months ago, you would have been tentative and questioning yourself and worried that you're bringing the somatic work in, and I just hear excitement and boldness coming from you. And just that, like, she teared up from that, right? Just that witnessing of the pattern changing and the progress happening through the work, right? So it's so powerful to listen, and then like you're seeing, just like share how you see the pattern is shifting. It's big work. Good. Shamet.
So I actually have a question, Joanna. When I first made my comment, you asked how it landed for Anne, and it had landed well, but I was wondering, what I got from it, and tell me if I'm wrong, but I could feel that you were saying that the way that I was speaking and the language that I was using is for my particular client doing energy work and the clairvoyance and the chakras, and that perhaps when I'm asking such specific questions that I could perhaps listen more to who my client is and adjust the way that I'm speaking. Is that
little, but I don't want you to question yourself, because I think anyone that's going to come to you is going to understand that language. And honestly, anyone that comes to me is going to understand that language too. But if this were just like a listening practicum and somebody was sharing just the words that Anne shared, they may not understand masculine, feminine in the way that you were describing it. And so I guess where the comment was coming from was more, if we're using phrases or language that we have a certain understanding of what it is, we just want to make sure that our clients have an understanding of what it is too. I don't think you're ever going to have an issue with anyone that comes to you, right? I think based on who your ideal client is, but not everybody out there, if you would say like you're more in your masculine or you're more in your feminine, would resonate with that.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for that awareness. Yeah.
I don't want you to question yourself on that, because again, I think your particular marketing pre-qualifies that.
No, that's true. Clairvoyant channel. I mean, they're going to, yeah. But I really appreciate that awareness, because sometimes I just assume that everyone is understanding the energetics of that, and that awareness has, you've just brought more awareness to me and my practice and my listening skills. So that's one of my things that I want to, that's my takeaway.
Beautiful.
Yeah, thank you.
You're welcome. All right, everybody, thank you so much for your presence and your wisdom and your brilliance and your intuition and your heart and your listening. Thank you, Anne, for being so vulnerable. These calls are always a gift to me, every single one of them. I feel like I get a lot from it too, and from being in community with each of you. So we don't have a call next week. But I'm around. Actually, you guys have a call with Caitlin next week. But anyway, I'm around. If you need anything, post on Facebook. And I will talk to you soon. Have a great rest of your day. Bye.